The Green Room with Johnstown Garden Centre, home of expert garden advice. JohnstownGardenCentre.ie.
Hi Yvonne, how are you?
Good morning, John. I'm grand. It's another super day for gardening.
Oh, absolutely. And it's the weather has been pretty warm at the very least. Even if it's dull and overcast, there wasn't a hell of a lot of rain. Does that mean that the growing has slowed down, or because of the warm weather it's kind of increased, or is it the best weather of everything?
It's never the best weather, John. The heat certainly helped to warm up the ground. Yes, we do need a bit of rain. I suppose if we were in the west of Ireland, we'd be giving out that we got no sun at all. But we do need a bit of rain. The little smattering we got will have helped. But if you've got plants in containers, you would certainly want to be watering them. And vegetables and that are taking their time to come on. Everything is really slow and way behind this year. So look at the ground is dry now. We are getting the bit of heat. So the next thing that the gardener needs to do is get out there and do some watering. As I say, if you have stuff in containers or if you have young veg coming up or anything like that, you would want to be getting out there with the watering.
Yeah, we are at the thick of end of things, really, because we're coming in towards end of June, which gives you another really 6 or 7 weeks of really good summertime gardening, isn't it?
Oh, God, I hope it gives us more than that, John.
Right, okay.
Mac.
Well, you're talking about into September then, really, is it? So.
Yeah. I would hope, you know, I mean, for the last few years, it's been it's been weird in that we've tended to get our summer in May, and then we get another belt of summer in September, and June gradually deteriorates into July and August, which turn out to be a disaster. So I'm hoping for once that we're due a good July and August, you know, because you can see everything coming into flower now and everything is getting there. And it'd be nice if the weather stayed halfway kind so that, you know, when things like roses and bedding plants and all these come into flower, that the wind and the rain doesn't just whip them all away just before we can get the enjoyment out of them.
Okay, a couple of questions already beginning to come in. So we better get to them, Yvonne. So first up, it's to do with herbs. Again, this comes up regularly enough, but this time, how to grow peppermint, how to grow coriander, and how to grow chives are my choice of three. Are they all similar and easy to grow, says Peter?
Well, Peter, they're all easy to grow. That's number one. Coriander, he said peppermint, coriander, and chives.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Coriander is sort of, put that to one side because that's an annual. And you'll plant coriander and it'll grow for a few weeks or a month or whatever. And then it'll tend to go to seed and you'll have to sow more. A bit like if you have sweet basil or that during the summer.
Okay.
They just last quite a short time and you've got to, you limp them along through the summer as best you can. And then for the winter time, you probably have a pot inside on your window ledge if you use them, as I do quite often. So that's the annual one. They're very easy to grow. And again, if you want, you can go to the supermarket, you can pick up these plants and you can put them out in the garden. You know, the herb plants that you get in the supermarket.
Yeah.
Or you can go to your garden centre, get your plants and put them out. But remember that your coriander is an annual. It will not be there after the winter. It'll be gone. Now, chives, on the other hand, and the spearmint. Well, let's look at chives first. Chives are perennials. They grow there forever. They die down under the ground in winter and then they come up in the summer, and you can divide chives. And in fact, they're lovely to put even as an edge to a bed. You could have a little chive hedge at the edge of a bed.
Yeah.
Number one, it's great for keeping away the bugs because it's in the onion family. And number two, it looks lovely. Chives in flower look fabulous and they flower for a long time. And you can use and use and use them.
Yeah.
So they're easy and you would divide them in the winter. The peppermint, spearmint, lemon mint, garden mint, all of these different mints are all perennials as well. Very easy to grow. But they spread like the dickens.
Right.
So if you're growing mint, you put it in a big pot and plunge it down into the ground. If you're growing these things in the ground, put it in the ground so that the roots are contained in the pot and you don't end up with peppermint coming up half a metre away.
Okay, so let's just go back on that one. So you dig a hole deep enough to put the whole pot in the ground, and it looks from a perspective of looking at it, it looks as if it's in the ground, but it's in a pot buried underneath the soil.
Have it in one, John. That's exactly it. And that contains your mint, any of the mint family. Please do that with, because they do spread uncontrollably, you know. And then just use away. Again, the mint dies back in the winter, and you can cut it to the ground or whatever. And with any of these herbs that die back in the winter, I know it's a bit early to be mentioning it, but while they're in full leaf and lovely and fresh at this time of the year, if you pick some leaves and just put them, you know, scald them with a bit of boiling water and pour this water and leaf mix into ice cube trays, and then you can have your ice cubes, mint ice cubes or coriander ice cubes or basil ice cubes or whatever, you can have them all in the fridge, and then you can use these through the winter and you have your fresh herbs frozen, you know. So it's a handy old way of doing it.
Okay, now here's a good interesting question. This is from Arthur, who's listening on the far side of the border over in where has he gone? Edenderry direction. Hello to you, Arthur, nice to have you along. He says, Yvonne, I don't have a problem with my grass lawn, actually it looks fantastic. What I'd like to know is a bit of advice regarding the look of the lawn. I'd like to have a kind of like a football pitch, as in the stripes one way and the stripes the other way. The size of the garden is 60 metres by 40. Any way of making it look good? That's okay, that's a good one. You being the landscaper and everything else, you'd probably know how to do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's dead simple if you've got the right lawnmower.
Okay.
And there's only one lawnmower that's going to do that, and that's a lawnmower with a roller on it. It's a cylinder mower, as opposed to most mowers nowadays are rotary mowers. So they have a blade that swivels around underneath, like a helicopter blade underneath, and that cuts your grass. But it doesn't put any lines on the ground. Now, if you've got the old-fashioned cylinder mower, the blades are on a cylinder, so they're rotating on a cylinder forward, in a forward motion only. And behind the blades, you have another roller on the mower as well. And when you roll, when you go in one direction, that flattens the grass down in one direction. And when you come back up the next stripe, you're flattening in the opposite direction, so you get this lovely striped effect on your lawn. Does look really, really well. Does look fantastic. But the only thing that will do it is a cylinder mower. And they're not that, you know, easy to find out there anymore. You'll have to go to a proper lawnmower dealer and get one.
Okay, and while you're just on that topic as well, so on that subject, what about the height adjustment? Do you need to adjust the height, or what should it be at?
The height, when you're mowing a lawn, if it has been grown quite high, you will gradually bring your mowing height down. Now, if you want nice lines on your lawn, you will be mowing at quite a low height. So with your cylinder mower, you'll start off with your highest height. The next time you mow, you'll bring it down one, down, 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 and you'll bring it down to quite a low height. And then you'll end up with a nice, nearly a golf green effect. So you'll have your... But don't leave your grass grow long. If your grass is too long, number one, it'll encourage weeds, and number two, it'll encourage moss. So keep your mowing height down, but bring that height down gradually.
Okay. Now, Dave is on. It's all the guys today. Dave wants to know, is it too late to sow spinach and rocket lettuce, and how easy is it to grow rocket?
No, I put in... I sowed my spinach row the other day, because some of my spinach beds, again, with this weather and the way the weather is coming, John, vegetables are bolting. Now, they're not taking off and running away on you, but by bolting in vegetables, it means they're going to seed. I grow onions, and a lot of my onions this year are going to seed. I'm having to watch them every evening to take seed heads off them. So some of my spinach had decided to bolt on me, so I just took out the bolted plants, and I have inter-sown some seed in between in the spinach row. Certainly you will keep sowing lettuce. You can keep sowing lettuce seed right up to August, September. Radishes, all the different ones. What did he say as well? Spinach? Spinach, lettuce, and rocket. Oh, rocket. Look at rocket. Yeah. You can, and again, it'll go to seed, and you sow new plants. And you just keep this rotation going of throwing in more seed. It'll come up. Make sure you water it in well when you sow it. And don't bury the seed too deep. It will never come up.
And because of healthy eating, and because of the way diet trends have changed as well, the likes of spinach and the likes of rocket and kale and all this type of stuff is becoming phenomenally popular, isn't it?
Yeah, but sure. And John, the thing about it is, it's as easy to grow these things, you know. And you know, I mean, sometimes I often think we're talking to people with big gardens, and people listening in with only a window box or a patio don't think that it applies to them if they only have a balcony. But this all applies to smaller areas too, like your balcony or your very small garden. Just get yourself a couple of big window boxes or containers or whatever, and you could have a pot of lettuce, and you could have a pot of rocket, and you could have your chives and your spinach and a pot of carrots. There's nothing to stop you having all these things in pots and using them as you want to. You don't have to be growing an acre of the blooming stuff out there,
yeah,
you know?
I'd agree with you 100% on that one. Right, algae is forming on gravel stone surfaces. Is there any or no corrosive thing or corrosive, non-corrosive thing, I presume, that you can use on the large area that is containing algae surfaces? Okay, what's the best way of getting rid of algae these days?
Yeah, it's a great, this is a great cure for algae. It's called a rake.
Go on.
No, well, you've heard the saying, John. Yeah. A rolling stone grows no moss.
Yes, that's true too. Yeah.
So if you can roughen up your, it's evidently a damp area. It's not walked on very much, or else if it is, it's totally compacted and soil has come up through the pebble, and you've got your algae grow. The algae is not grown on the pebble itself; it's grown between the pebbles. And those pebbles need to be loosened up, or maybe a new dressing of pebble on top would help that area as well. You might need a few more pebbles, but certainly, I mean, no, you're not going to spray it. You know, it's like you could put a moss killer on it, and that will kill the algae, but it's going to look brown and yuck anyway. Yeah. You're still going to have to get your rake out and freshen up the area. So look at buy yourself a nice spring rake and get out there and start raking.
Okay, good one there. It's simple enough, straightforward. Right, on we go. Plum trees. Marjorie was on. Just want to make sure it's the right name. It is Marjorie. Marjorie was on regarding some plum trees. She had this issue a couple of years ago, and she said she was on to you guys about the same thing regarding ants living in her plum trees and trees. Mm. They seem to be everywhere in the last few weeks. Will it have a knock-on effect regarding the buds and regarding the growth of the plums going forward this season?
Look, they can do a bit of damage, all right, but there are plenty of powders out there to get rid of ants, you know. And if you just stand and look at the tree, they're coming from somewhere. There's either a little nest of them down at the base of the tree, probably, or whatever. So get your ant dust out and try and get rid of them, because, you know, it's even annoying, you know, whatever damage they do aside from that. If you've got ants in plums and that, you know, and around them when you're picking them, that's not very pleasant, even if you have them on the plum tree. So try and get some ant dust down wherever, you know. Keep an eye and see, just stand for a few minutes, you'll see what they go in very definite paths from their nest out to forage and back again. And I know it's killing one of these little creatures, but for ants, I don't shed too many tears about ants, I'm afraid.
Okay, fair enough. On we go. Celia was on. She said, in my last house, we only moved into this house, but in my last house, the year before we left, we scarified the lawn, but it didn't go according to plan. I believe I'm going to have the same problem this time round in our newish house. We're in a year, but I think it needs to be scarified. Can you give us any tips? Okay, first of all, for those people who don't know what scarification or scarify is, what is it, Yvonne?
Scarifying is kind of ripping the divil out of the lawn altogether, and you nearly end up, you know, you end up...
Yeah, I've seen those jokes, scarifiers.
Ripping it up, and you do get a scarifying machine.
Yeah.
Now, you see, sometimes people think they can just scarify a lawn and all will be well, and sometimes that does happen, and all will be well. But you kind of have to ask yourself, why is the problem occurring in the first place? You know, is it very mossy? Why are you scarifying? Are you scarifying to get rid of moss? Are you scarifying because you've got rough old grasses growing through the grasses, or you have a lot of weeds or whatever? So you might have to try and get to the root of the problem. Is your drainage bad? Is the ground very bad? Does the lawn need feeding? So rather than just scarifying and saying, oh, that didn't cure the problem, maybe you're not dealing with the problem in the whole, in that you're getting a very quick solution. The scarifying will have it looking lovely for a couple of weeks, and then you're back to square one again, so you feel as though you've wasted your time and energy. So try and find out what the problem is you're going to cure, and use a cure. It might be me that you need to improve drainage. It might be that you need to feed the lawn. It might be that you need to aerate the lawn, or, you know, there's loads of reasons that your lawn is not looking good. So find out the reason before you just decide scarifying is the answer.
Yeah, get you. Okay, good one. Right, this is more a comment, but you might be able to, comment on the comment, Yvonne. It's Mick in Meath. How you doing, Mick? John, I planted a rambling rector 5 years ago. What's a rambling rector? Is that a rose or something?
It's a rose. Okay. Well done, John.
5 years ago. It's now spread all along the garden fence. It's now in full bloom with little white flowers and gorgeous scent. It attracts the honeybees now, and I've never had to feed my roses except for a bit of farm manure.
Well, you couldn't be feeding with better, and it's fantastic. And I tell you, Rambling Rector doesn't have that name for nothing.
Right.
It does ramble everywhere. And it's a fantastic rose. Some of these older roses that you can, and sometimes if you have a rose, you know, you could have it in a bed, maybe you have a tree near that bed or something, and you could have something like Rambling Rector at the edge of the bed where it's growing up through the tree, and you'd have these massive, beautiful, scented flowers up in your tree maybe later on in the year when you don't have anything on it. So it's a fantastic rose, and you can literally nearly get the hedge clippers at it in the winter. It's one of those roses that grows so well that you can cut it right back and it'll grow on again. And farmyard manure is the best thing you could be doing for a rose.
Okay.
Just to dress over the ground with farmyard manure. You don't ever dig around a rose. That's a no-no all the time.
Yeah.
But you do have to feed. And farmyard manure is both providing a mulch and it's providing organic matter and a bit of food.
Okay, speaking of manure, what about manure for potatoes? Is it too late to actually put manure to help the potatoes or not? I think the potatoes must be nearly coming up out of the ground at this stage, would they be?
They would be. They'd be well up, John. In fact, I was looking at my own the other day. I'm wondering, you know, I love early potatoes, you know, the lovely little salad potatoes. And I was very tempted to lift one out the other day and see whether they're big enough. But I know they won't be. I just know they won't be. So I'm trying to keep a bit of patience, you know. But no, I wouldn't be feeding potatoes at this time of the year. No, they'll have plenty of food in the ground now. You would usually put on a bit of pre-sowing fertiliser when you're sowing potatoes, you know, earlier on in the year. Don't feed them now.
Okay, I have 3 hyacinth bulbs in pots that I got as a present. They need to be repotted. Is it time to do this now, or do I wait till they die back and explain, please? Okay, Vaughn, go for it.
No, you wait, because you see, these hyacinth bulbs, you would have got them as hyacinths in full flower, and that's grand. A lot of people have hyacinths at Christmas time, and I do. When mine are finished flowering at Christmas, I get the pots and I put them outside. I ignore them totally. I put them out in the backyard, and then when they've died back and they look absolutely diabolical and the leaves just pull away from the bulbs, then I'm back to the ordinary hyacinth bulb. And what I do with them then is I just stick them in the ground into one of the beds out in the ground, and I have hyacinths popping up everywhere then in the springtime. Now, these hyacinths, when if you were given them, they might have been forced into flowering. If you had them for Christmas, for example, and you still have some leaves, possibly you still have some leaves on them now. So they would have died back. But when they flower next year, they'll flower in spring. So they'll flower a bit later. Could be March, April time by the time they come into flower. But look, when the leaves are dead on them, you can either leave them and plant them in the ground in the autumn, or you can stick them straight into the ground and put them in, and they'll come up then next spring. You can forget about them then. Put them down about 2 inches into the ground, leave them off, and you'll have hyacinths coming up in your bed next year. Oh. Or if you want to keep them for pots, then take the leaves off them, then you're back to your bulbs, put them in a brown paper bag or something like that, write hyacinths on the outside of the bag, I don't care if you say to yourself, and put them somewhere where you won't forget, you know, and you come back in 3 years' time and they've shriveled to nothing. So put them away somewhere in the garden shed or somewhere, and then in the autumn time, you can put them back in pots for growing, for flowering in the springtime.
Okay, onward bound. Off to Susan and Kieran from Kilteel. Hello to you, Susan and Kieran from Kilteel. We have purchased a house down around the Kilmuckridge area, Curraghclough direction in Wexford. Our lucky house is right on the beach, about 100 metres from the sand. We have beautiful sea views, but our garden is in tatters. We've bought this from an old lady. She goes on a bit about it. But the question is, any ideas what we can grow in those locations? Sea, salt air, sea around that location. Yvonne, that's a tough question, yeah. Really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because there's only specific plants that, again, and if she walks around the area, she will see the kind of things that
are growing and working
quite well.
Yeah.
You know, the things things like, and will they come to me now, for any of the Phormiums will do quite well, will do very, very well. There are different forms of grasses that will do really, really well. Escalonia will do well. And there's lots of things like sea pinks and small herbaceous plants. But she's going to have to go online or go into a garden centre and ask for plants for a seaside area, and be aware of what height you want these plants to finally grow to, etc., etc. So there are specific plants, and usually they have fairly leathery leaves, John, so they're fairly resistant to salt air and sea water, you know, washing up in spray up against them and all. But there are specific plants that won't be affected adversely by the sea conditions, but you have to go for those specific plants. You can't just say to yourself, I put in all the lovely plants I had up in Kildare. They will not thrive in sea area.
Okay, one final question to do with a garden pond. This, it doesn't say who it's from, but we're off in the Newcastle direction. Goodness gracious me, a lot of people are outside the border areas are onto us today. I have loads and loads and loads of rock, a couple of old railway sleepers. I have loads and loads of plastic and a big hole in the ground and nothing else.
Right, so that's a good starting point. Go on, we're getting there.
Okay, so the question is, now what?
Well, now what? First of all, will you use the plastic to put the rock and the railway sleepers on? So, you know, that's number one. You are not using plastic to line your pond. So
okay,
I'm sorry about
there
that.
You go. And that's
so,
probably
so
going
the
to...
plastic can be used for something else.
Okay.
Now, with regard to your pond, you're going to line that with butyl rubber.
Okay, good one there.
Butyl rubber. It has to be butyl rubber, a proper pond lining butyl rubber, which you will get from a garden centre or wherever, or a pond person or whatever.
Yep.
You will get that. And whatever you're, you know, depending on the, you've got to allow, you know, if you've got a hole in the ground, you've got the diameter of the base of the hole, you've got also the length of the two sides coming up.
Yeah, that was
and
nice.
Then you need an overlap of about 30 to 40 centimetres minimum on top that you will put your rocks on to hold the butyl rubber in place. And before you put your butyl rubber into the ground, you're going to have to line your pond with a very fine sand so that no stones or anything come through the butyl rubber. So that's the starting point, John.
Yeah.
And then they can design the rockery and their few sleepers around that, but they're going to start with sand and butyl rubber.
And you know, at that point, that's what I want those people to do. So take that advice on board, get to the next stage, and maybe report back to us and let us know what the next stage is,
and
send us some photographs. Yeah, and we'll take it from there as well. Hold on, Mick back again. John, Mick in Mead for that woman, Japanese.
Oh, the rambling rector.
Yeah, Mick. The rambling rector. Mick, are you a rambling rector here? John, Mick and Mead again. For that woman, Japanese grass, she will get black and purple and green colours, great fillers. Were we talking about Japanese grass, are we?
Oh, we were talking about the woman in Wexford, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
seaside?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah,
some of the grasses are very, you can get the Ophiopogons, you can get all the Hakanakloas and all these Japanese grasses, which will do very well in a seaside area. But it depends, I mean, she might want a hedge, you know, a rather than a 6-inch plant. I don't know what she's looking for. So depends on what height the plants and what she wants to do with them, John.
Okay, fair enough. And on that note, we'll park it there, Yvonne. Brilliant stuff indeed. That was quite entertaining and very broad spectrum. We covered lots of great topics. And of
course, nice and varied.
Nice and varied indeed.
And look, at just a word of warning, that more muggy weather, there might be a bit of blight out there for anybody growing potatoes or tomato plants. You might need to do a bit of spraying, lads.
Okay, very good. And you can ring Yvonne on
087-285-0011.
And as always, thanks to Jim and the team down at Johnstown Garden Centre who bring this slot to us since day one of the radio station opening. Fair dues to them, and hi to all the gang who are glad to see back to some sort of normality after recent times. Anyway, Yvonne, we will talk to you pretty soon. Thank you very much.
Bye.
The Green Room with Johnstown Garden Centre, home of expert garden advice. JohnstownGardenCentre.ie.